Oh, thank you. It is good to be back. I got to tell you a story, though. This past week, there's this family said, hey, could we get some time with you? I've got two daughters. They want to ask some questions about heaven. So we met at a little coffee shop, a wonderful couple, a man and his wife and two teenage girls ask incredible questions about heaven. And at the end of the conversation, I said, well, how long have you been at our church? We're in Phoenix, Arizona. They said, we've been there about a year and a half. I said, well, where are you from? And they go, well, we're from Colorado. Well, my wife's from Colorado, so I asked, what town in Colorado? He said, well, you probably never heard of it. It's a place called Thornton. And I said, well, it's interesting because I'm going to be preaching at a church right near Thornton this weekend. They said, what church? And I said, well, you probably never heard about it. It's Flatirons. And they go, well, that was our church. Well, not anymore. They're at our church. But what I love about that is the connectedness between our two churches. If you were to come to Christ Church of the Valley this weekend, it would feel pretty much exactly like this. So I come in already feeling at home. So thank you for that wonderful welcome. I've not always felt at home at church. In fact, I led a church. My first church out of college was a little church in San Antonio, Texas. Now, I grew up in Sacramento. Don't hold that against me. Maybe you realize that Texas and California kind of hate each other. Those flatlanders in Texas, man, you still call them flatlanders? They're just, it's a different world down there. When I came into the church, they said, listen, one thing you didn't know is you do have to root for the Dallas Cowboys. I thought it was a joke. Oh no, it was not, like, it will destroy your ministry if you don't. And so here I am, the city kid. Now, San Antonio is a big city, but they're really country folk down there. And the preachers in other churches, they were for sure country. One guy, big old dude named Skip Marsh, cowboy boots, cowboy hat. I mean, he was the Texas cowboy. And I had never been hunting. And so they're all laughing at me because I've never, you know, hunted. I've never killed an animal. So he goes, well, let me take you hunting. Skip and I were a little bit different. He drove an F-150. I drove a Datsun 510. He's country, I'm city. Like, we could not have been more different. But he takes me hunting, and we're in the deer blind hunting a white-tailed deer. I'd never done that before, so like, I got to be really quiet, and Skip is, you know, telling me, instructing me, and mostly because he didn't want to get shot. So we never saw a white-tailed deer that day. We did see an animal. It comes out of the brush. I'd never seen anything like it. I thought it came straight out of Jurassic Park. It had tusks, and it looked like it wanted to eat you. Some of you might know it was a javelina. It was so ugly. And Skip leans, of course, you got to be quiet. So he leans over and says, shoot it. Well, I didn't know what it was. And maybe this is a good rule, maybe not. I don't know. But I don't want to shoot anything if I don't know what it is. So I'm just staring at it. He keeps saying, shoot it, shoot it. And finally, I'm paralyzed. And the thing walks right through the clearing and into the brush and disappears. How long do you think it took me to outlive the mockery? The answer would be never. I know what it feels like to not belong. You ever been in a place where you're just a duck out of water? Some of you going, yeah, right now. Because church is like, you're not a church person. But maybe your girlfriend said, hey, church is the thing I do. And if you want us to be a thing, then this is your thing. And so you go, okay, I'll go. And you're wondering, like, some of you maybe even said coming in, if I walk into that building, it's probably going to collapse because there'll be thunder and lightning. And it didn't collapse, so you're welcome. I get what it's like to be in a place you don't feel like you belong. And if you feel right now like you don't belong in church, welcome home. This is the church that you can belong. Whether you're, like, we don't look at your past, we look at your future. And the church that I serve regularly and this church, I know Flatirons is a church where people who are uncomfortable in church find themselves comfortable. It's weird. And it's not because we want to be nice. It's not because we're trying to be, you know, sensitive or any of that. We're just trying to be like Jesus. You know that Jesus was comfortable with people who were uncomfortable in their church, in their synagogue. In fact, it's a crazy thing. Jesus got invited to way more keggers than I ever did. There's just something about him that prostitutes and tax collectors and foreigners and women and children, they just felt comfortable with him. So if you feel like, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna be uncomfortable, you might be in for a surprise because Jesus is attracted to people who are not normally attracted to church. And I want to tell you a story about that from the Gospel of Luke. If you have a Bible, Luke is one of the authors. He wrote a biography of Jesus. You can look in the table of contents and find the book of Luke. I got to tell you, Luke is interesting because he is an outsider. He is the only writer of the entire Bible who was not Jewish. So, I mean, Luke in the Bible, it kind of reminds me of that Sesame Street song, "One of these things is not like the other." He knows he doesn't belong, so he keeps telling stories about people who don't belong, about prostitutes, tax collectors, sinners, women, like foreigners. And here is one of the classic "I don't think I belong" stories. And by the end of it, you realize this is exactly the kind of person that should feel comfortable with Jesus because Jesus is comfortable with them. Chapter 7, verse 1. When Jesus had finished saying all this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. Now, Capernaum, you can actually go there today. It's an archaeological site, and you can kind of get the feel as you walk through the streets of what it must have been like, the black basalt, narrow street. You can kind of look into people's homes. Capernaum was a village of about 2,000 people. They called it a town, but it was a village. But it was a hub for all the villages around, and Jesus made it a hub for his own ministry. Verse 2 says, there was a centurion servant whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. Now, Luke is actually a physician. And so when he says he's about to die, Luke is attuned to people's illnesses. And I don't know what this kid got. Could have been a form of malaria, but the poor kid is in trouble. And you wouldn't normally think that a master would care that much about his servants, but it was surprisingly common for masters to actually adopt some of their servants that were dearly loved and highly valued. This is like the surrogate son for him. And this centurion, like he's a hardened military man. He's a tough dude. But when his servant that he looked at as a son was sick, he needed help. And so he goes to the local leaders. This is verse 3. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal a servant. Now, if you don't know, a centurion, well, they were a military man, as the name suggests. They lead 100 men. So they're naturally good leaders. But a peculiarity in the Roman military, if you were to be an officer, you had to be born to a high-class family. If you enlist in the army, you go in as a foot soldier, the highest rank you could ever achieve was centurion. So these centurions were men who, naturally good leaders, they're the highest that they'll ever get. They understand the guys below them because they've walked in their sandals. But they also have the leadership to communicate with the leaders above them. So centurions, in all of Greco-Roman literature, the centurions were the backbone of the Roman military. So think stud. And this guy wants to go to the Jewish leaders to ask for Jesus to help them. That's a problem. Because if you're a centurion living in a Jewish city, they hate you. You would call yourself peacekeeping force. They would call you an invader. They hated the Roman military, and which actually put them in jeopardy because the village is 2,000 people with tens of thousands nearby. He only has 100 guys. They're badly outnumbered. They're desperately hated. So this guy, he wants to kind of play nice. How do you do that? Watch in verse 4. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. Jim and I were actually in the synagogue of Capernaum. It's a 5th century synagogue, but it was built right on top of the 1st century synagogue. And if you go around the side of that first century synagogue, you can look at the foundation stone that this centurion laid. You can actually reach down and touch it, which you touch something laid by a guy in the, this guy. He has 100 men at his disposal. They're peacekeeping force, but they're bored most of the time. So instead of just hanging out in the barracks, what he does is puts them into the population and says, hey, these local Jewish people, they need a synagogue built. And so they use their soldiers as manual labor to lay the bricks and mortar and foundation. And that was a great favor to the Jews of Capernaum. And they loved him for it. So they come to Jesus and say, please, Jesus, help this guy. So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That's why I didn't even consider myself worthy to come to you, but say the word and my servant will be healed. Say the word. This guy's a commander. He knows what it means to give a command, but he's suggesting that Jesus can command inanimate spiritual forces that are causing his servant to be sick. Where in the world would a pagan centurion get this idea that Jesus could just speak health into existence? Well, I got to tell you another story. It didn't happen in Capernaum, but it was a man from Capernaum. He's a business guy, traveled to Cana. It's about 13 miles up in the hills. Cana, you might recall, is where Jesus turned water to wine. Is also where this businessman, Jewish businessman, comes from Capernaum, where Jesus now is, to Cana. And while he's there, Jesus is in Cana. And he said, Jesus, but I've got a son, same situation. My son is sick. He's desperately sick. Will you come down and touch my son? Heal my son. He pleaded with him. You know what Jesus does? This will take your breath away. He actually rebukes the guy. He's like, well, why kick a guy while he's down? He says, why do you think I need to come down to your house? You don't believe that I can just speak 13 miles away, speak, and he will be healed? The problem was, he's not just kicking a guy while he's down. He actually is rebuking the entire crowd of people because they just want to see a miracle. They just want Jesus for what they can get out of Jesus. They don't want Jesus himself. And a lot of people are like, maybe you're like that. You come to church and you pray your prayers and, you know, if I read my Bible or if I tithe or, you know, do the right things, then God will bless my life, right? 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 We don't come to Jesus for what we can get out of him. We come to him for who he is. And when you come to Jesus for who he is and not for what you can get out of him, you will get from him far more than you ever imagined. What if Jesus is more than you can imagine? I got to tell you this experience that I had while I was in Cana. A group of guys were hiking there, and the first time I went there, I just thought there was a little church memorializing the turning water to wine. I didn't realize the church was actually built right on top of an archaeological site of a wealthy home of the first century. Now, I had this rule with the guys. When we're hiking, I say, listen, it is time to go. When I say it's time to go, you go, because we got to keep pace. But if Jesus is speaking to you, and every time I take people to Israel, Jesus personally speaks to each person. If Jesus is speaking to you, I'm not going to interrupt. You don't have to say a word, just raise your hand. You raise your hand and we'll wait for Jesus to be done with you. So we come into this site. I'd never been there before. I'm looking down into this first century home. You can actually go underneath the church and walk through that first century home. It's thrilling. And all the guys are asking me questions, and I started to hear this voice, and I just raised my hand, and the guys left me alone. And what I heard looking down into that home, I don't know if you've ever been in a hotel and you hear people in another room, and you can't hear what they're saying, but you can hear the tone, whether it's angry or happy or sad. I heard voices, not through a wall, but through 2,000 years of time. And they were pleading Jesus to heal them. I was so stunned at that moment, I couldn't speak. In fact, it was 30 minutes later before I could speak, and we're out on the road hiking, and I leaned into my best friend and said, Larry, that, like, I heard a voice. Something happened to me back there. He goes, I know. And he pulled out his iPhone and he showed me a picture of the moment when Jesus was speaking to me. Like, I know that Jesus is more than I imagine. And I want to ask you, what if today you come to church and you want something from Jesus, but maybe you have some expectations of him. What if he's more than you imagined? What if he's greater than just what you want out of him? This rich man, this businessman, he goes back home. Jesus told him, your son's healed, go. So he goes back home. The next day, he's on the way, and his servants meet him on the road. He said, hey, good news, your son has been healed. And he said, what time was my son healed? And he looked at his watch, and it was the exact time that Jesus said he's healed. And he realized, oh my gosh, Jesus can heal at 13 miles away. Well, you know, a dad who has a son healed that miraculously, he's gonna talk about it. And so this businessman, everyone who will listen, he's like, have you heard about what happened to my son? My son was healed. Jesus was in Canaan. I was in one of the guys that he does business with, because he's a wealthy man in Capernaum, has to be this centurion. This centurion heard the story of the wealthy man's son healed at a distance. So he knows Jesus doesn't have to come to my home. And if Jesus crosses the threshold of this Gentile's home, there will be hell to pay for Jesus in Capernaum. It was racism. They hated the Romans because they were this imposing, invading military force. So if Jesus crosses over, this centurion, he wants his servant healed, but he doesn't want Jesus to have to pay for the healing. So he sends these servants and says, Jesus, stop. I didn't come to you myself because I don't want to damage your ministry. You just speak the word and he'll be healed. Verse 8, for I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. At his word, he will do it. Jesus, he'd never seen anything like that. And it says the most amazing thing in verse 9. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Here's what's amazing. Jesus was amazed. Now think about it. How could you amaze Jesus? If, let's say you're a swimmer and you go, hey, Jesus, watch this. I swim really fast. And he just walks along going, yeah, that is really fast swimming. Like, how are you gonna amaze Jesus? Are you gonna say, listen, I'm a really good singer, Jesus, and he's got all the archangels around him. Is he gonna go, oh yeah, that's pretty good. Do you think Jesus right now is up in heaven going, Michael, Gabriel, you gotta hear this Mark guy, he's preaching. I'm like, wow, no way. But Jesus may be amazed right now. He may be amazed right now, not by what happens on the stage, but what's happening in your heart. Because when there are people who you never expect to be comfortable in church are comfortable with Jesus, Jesus is amazed. Only two times in his life was Jesus ever amazed. Two times. He was amazed at this man that he believed in Jesus. And he was amazed at his own hometown, Nazareth, that they didn't believe in Jesus. The only way you will ever amaze Jesus, it's not with your service, it's not with your gift, it's not with your abilities, it's with your faith. And some of you right now come in here and go, I just don't know if I belong. Everyone else has their act together. No, they don't. Like, we're all just a bunch of Humpty Dumpties. Let's just admit that. But if you come in here thinking, I don't know about this whole church thing, I don't know about this whole religion thing, but there's something about Jesus that I believe he can do more than I imagined in my life. He will be amazed at you. Isn't that amazing? Let me fast forward to another centurion. This is at the end of Jesus' life. Again, rough and tumble soldier. He was in Jerusalem. He was at the cross. The centurion in charge of the execution, who had put the nails in Jesus' hand. He put the nails in Jesus' feet. He's standing there watching all of this unfold. And Pilate only had 600 soldiers in Jerusalem, which means there were six centurions. He was one of the six centurions. So you know he was in the praetorium. You know that he got to overhear the trial. When Pilate said, "What is truth?" and walked away, truth was standing right in front of him. He witnessed that. When the chief priests were accusing Jesus of all these different crimes, and Jesus didn't say a word, this centurion had seen a lot of people under trial. He's seen a lot of people get persecuted. He's seen a good number get crucified. He had never seen anything like Jesus. And there he was. They pinned him to a tree, lifted up the cross, dropped it in the hole. And the first words out of Jesus' mouth, you remember? The first words, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He'd never seen anything like that. The thief on the right and on the left, they were cursing and complaining and yelling, and that's what the centurion expected, but Jesus. And I gotta wonder if Jesus looked straight at the one who put the nails in him and said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He was so thunderstruck by that. And then it says, this is Luke chapter 23. "It was now about noon," so Jesus had been on the cross for 3 hours, "and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. For the sun stopped shining and the curtain of the temple was torn in two." I don't know if the guy ever even knew about the curtain of the temple. Probably never heard that it was torn, but the darkness, that's hard to miss. Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he said this, he breathed his last. His first word, his last word on the cross were, "Father." And this guy, he didn't know a lot about Jewish religion. He knew that there were some fanatics. He knew they were there to keep peace. He knew there were a lot of riots, but he had never seen anything like this Jesus. And in the Gospel of Mark, it records a statement, a simple one sentence of this centurion that rocked his world. "And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, 'Surely this man was a son of God.'" You know who centurions called son of God? The emperor. He is looking at a crucified victim. Crucifixion was the most demeaning form of torture and punishment known to the Romans. It was so degrading, in fact, that no Roman, a Roman citizen, was not allowed to be crucified under law unless they were a traitor to the emperor. And yet this man, a Jew, crucified, accused by his own people, there was something in him this centurion saw that he knew he was more than that he could ever imagine. And he made this statement that you only make of emperors. Well, Jesus is dying, then he's not going to be an emperor on this world's throne. He is an emperor above the emperor. It is the most extraordinary statement of faith. And maybe that's where you are, where you come in a little confused or maybe a little uncomfortable, like this is not your jam, but somehow you see Jesus and you say, "I don't know about all this other stuff, but him, I know that he's more than meets the eye." I met a guy a couple months ago who is my centurion. And I gotta ask just a couple of questions. Is it possible that you could be amazed that you could believe in Jesus? Because Jesus may be amazed that you believe in him. Stephen was this guy's name. And every year I take 12 guys on a hike in Israel. And one of the guys who was scheduled to go was actually tragically killed in a car accident. So we only had 11, we had an open spot. And we were gonna keep the spot open to kind of have a memorial for him. We actually did bring his ashes over and put him in the Lake of Galilee. But just before we left, one of my co-leaders had Stephen over. And so we're at this event together, and Stephen came up to me and said, "Hey, Jason just invited me to go on the trip." Now, I'm gonna tell you what a terrible human being I am. I thought Stephen needed to go. He wasn't a Christian, but he needed to walk where Jesus walked. He needed to take that pilgrimage. And so I said to Stephen, well, you realize that the only reason there's a spot open is because someone died. And you're telling me that you don't know if you want to go on this trip when God took someone's life just so you could go. It was totally manipulative. It's terrible. I apologize. He wound up going on the trip. If we got 12 miles a day that we're walking, you can have a lot of conversations in 12 miles. And Stephen, he started into the Bible. I don't know if I believe in all that stuff. And I said, well, what are you curious about? Like, ask a question. We got time. What are you curious about? So we talked about the Bible. And then we talked about creation, and we talked about ethics, and we talked about morality. You know what was his biggest deal? It was the church. He said, I don't like the church. Because people in the church, they're just hypocrites. I go, I know. I am one. I said, Stephen, if you're gonna be honest, you're a hypocrite too. He goes, yeah, I am. He's a business guy. Like a centurion, he's got 100 employees. And he regrets some of his decisions, and he regrets some of the way he's treated his wife, and he regrets some decisions he made with his family. Can anyone relate to Stephen? Like, you know you could have done better in life. And as we walked, just one question after another, like tumblers in a lock, just began to fall. When we got to Jerusalem, he got a tattoo. There's a tattoo shop there that opened in 1300. You probably heard it from Jim. You see in his hand, that's where he got that tattoo. Razook's tattoos. So I took Stephen to Razook's, and he got this. It was an awesome tattoo. It was a Jerusalem cross with two centurion swords going through it. Super cool tattoo. But underneath it he had this, a date. And the date was 2 days before the tattoo. And I go, Stephen, what is that? He said, that's when we were in Capernaum. Jesus became real to me in Capernaum. That's where Stephen raised his hand and said, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. When we got back to Phoenix, nobody could believe that Stephen believed in Jesus. And I'm not sure that Jesus believed that Stephen could believe in him. You know what you do when you're a new believer and nobody believes it? You come out, you go public. And so Stephen posted on social about his tattoo, showed a picture of that tattoo, and he said, ask me about it. And he is telling everyone about Jesus. And he had all 12 guys who were on the hike with him join him in the baptistry as he confessed his faith in Jesus and began to live a new life. This is what it looks like when 12 rough and tumble dudes, bunch of Humpty Dumpties, we don't have our act together, but we do know this, that we want to amaze Jesus, and the only way we'll ever do that is through our faith in him. And maybe you want Stephen's story to be your story. I want you to know it can be your story. And if you walk in here today, regardless of what campus you're on, or if you're watching online, or if you're watching on demand on a treadmill, his story can be your story. Because the people who were farthest from him often appreciated him the most. And that is amazing. Holy Father, we call on you to be our witness of our faith. We still have a lot of questions, and we still have a lot of things to work out in our walk with you. But this we know, that no one invited us in like Jesus. No one accepted us as Jesus did. And no one can lead us where we want to go better than him. We honor you. And I just pray for the Stephen in the crowd, the centurion right now, who can believe so that we can be amazed, and maybe you can be amazed as well. We pray this in the powerful name of Jesus. Amen.